Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does Dallas need to supercharge its arts community and become a city known as much for producing original works as exhibiting and selling them? Last year, SMU awarded its Meadows Prize to the New York-based public arts advocacy group Creative Time, which promised to study the scene in Dallas and deliver a comprehensive report on the strengths, weaknesses, and potential of the city's efforts to foster a vibrant arts scene. Joining us to give the first public remarks about the report's conclusions are Ann Pasternak, President and Artistic Director of Creative Time, and Jose Bowen, who is Dean of the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great. We really appreciate that you're letting Think listeners be the first to be able to discuss the report. I want to talk about this. It's called Building a Thriving Artistic Community. Does that imply we haven't had one in the past? We haven't built one sufficiently in the past?
And there we were trying to be subtle.
I mean, I think, you know, in all cases, it's a good to great problem. In fact, when you read the report, one of the things I think will surprise a lot of people is that there are a lot of positives about the Dallas arts community, that there are a lot of big things in place, and I'll let Ann talk more about that. But there are still things to do. And when we initially awarded the Meadows Prize, and I was talking to Ann about what we wanted to do, I framed it with, you know, we've just built this amazing performing arts center. We've got amazing facilities. Dallas is hugely ambitious. So it's not that Dallas doesn't have a wonderful arts community. It's that Dallas doesn't have the arts community it strives to have, that Dallas wants to be world class in everything we do. And so this is one of those areas. And so we've made some investment. What do we have to do to take it to the next level across the board?
And one of the things that you found, Ann, was that there are a lot of people here that will exhibit their art, but not as many people who are actually living and working and producing world class art in this community.
Well, I would say actually there are a lot of sensational artists in Dallas who choose to stay here. There are issues about whether there's a close enough community. We heard that a lot from artists, or opportunities for them to grow their work in Dallas. There aren't a lot of smaller mid-sized organizations that, you know, commission new work and encourage experimentation and the kinds of environment that artists need to grow their work. Your institutions are showing world-class programs. I mean, just take a look at the Dallas Museum. It's quite extraordinary, the exhibitions that they have there. So I would say that, you know, there's a lot of really incredible, important work being made here and being shown here. But still, there are significant opportunities to grow the occasions in which artists have to show and create new work.
How available is really good studio space?
Well, you know, this is one of the things that's a real strength for Dallas, because you actually have very affordable live workspace. Take a look at a city where I'm from, New York City. Artists are being priced out of the market, and artists who are graduating from, you know, art schools are choosing not to move to New York City, which is the tradition over the past 50 or 60 years, and are instead are looking for other vibrant artist communities where they can afford to live and find jobs that also afford them time to develop their own work. So this is something that Dallas has as a really core strength.
Jose, what keeps your students from graduating and thinking, okay, now I'm going to make it big and I'm going to drop everything and head for New York or somewhere else?
Well, a lot of them want to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is still the idea that if you want to make it big, you need to go to the centers of production, which right now really are New York and Los Angeles, depending on what you're going to do. So there are some students who still do that. What will keep them in Dallas is again being able to live here and produce art, having the institutions and the support to do that. But one thing that I think that we need to add is this culture of taking risk. That we need to have a more experimental art scene, music scene, dance, et cetera. And as patrons, as the public, as funding agencies, we've got to make sure we're supporting the small and medium-sized institutions that take the greater risks because they can. It's much harder to do that at the Opera, at the Winspear. You've got too big an investment. So partly students go away to the coasts to make it big, but they also partly go because they can have a crazy show and they can have a one-man show in a strange space and get 20 people, and that will be okay, and there's an audience there for that.
When you talk about small and medium-sized institutions to really support people, is it people who are simply allowing space to be used? What sort of institutions are you talking about?
Well, you know, it's a good question, and there are a lot of answers to that question. For example, you already have what we would call alternative art spaces, but there are very few of them, not enough to really address the needs, the exhibition needs, of the larger body of artists within the community. There are also opportunities for artists to take over spaces that aren't being used. There was a recent, I think it was last spring, example of a bunch of artists working together to create an exhibition in an old bank building. The modern ruin. So, you know, there could be more activation of unused spaces for artists to show new work and to build new audiences and to activate otherwise unused urban buildings.
Is it your sense, Anne, that art is part of most Dallasites' day-to-day existence, or is it something that we sort of silo off, like, okay, I'm going to go to work Monday through Friday, and then on a Saturday night, I'm going to spend 4 hours doing an experience of art? Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense, but because we were only here for 4 or 5 trips studying the art scene, I don't feel really equipped to be able to answer that question. What we did learn from the institutions and from the artists that we spoke with is that Dallas audiences tend to be very event-driven. They love it when, you know, the theater and opera house and museum are all having the opening nights together, and that the sense of community, people coming together, and even a party and an opportunity to learn and engage with one another. So it does seem to me that when there's an opportunity for big crowds, people in Dallas seem to like that. Is that your understanding?
Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that, Jose?
Yeah, I'm a relative newcomer, too. I don't know. Dallas is very event-driven. Some of it's self-perception. It's how we see ourselves. I don't think we yet see ourselves as an art-producing town where part of what we do is to go see avant-garde work or go see something new or different. That we're proud that we have the wonderful symphony and the opera and the Dallas Theater Center and the DMA and the Nasher. And when people come into town, we say, oh, you need to see that we have big institutions like that too. And that there's a culture of that rather than, oh, well, this is your one trip to Dallas. You need to see something in Dallas that you can't see anywhere else. You need to see this new artist that you can't see in New York who is doing this crazy new thing. And that's, again, you have the same problem when you go to New York. There are some people who just go to New York and go to Broadway. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of Dallasites who go to New York and don't go to Broadway and go to see shows that have not yet opened on Broadway.
One of the things that the report points out is the geographic separation. You know, the city is wide and it's spread out. On the one hand, I guess it's a good thing in that maybe multiple neighborhoods have, you know, places to go and experience art. On the other hand, there's not sort of a destination that automatically comes to mind when people think about avant-garde in Dallas, avant-garde art in Dallas.
I don't know that people think avant-garde in Dallas anyway.
That's fair enough.
You know, I think that, to Jose's point, for the most part, we're talking about, you know, tried and true operas, theater productions, you know, symphony, et cetera. And I don't think that people yet think of Dallas as a place for new work to be made, although there's a significant opportunity. Dallas has everything going for it to be put on the map as a place that really incubates new talent across artistic disciplines.
Do you think some of that could be a lack of self-confidence in our own tastes? You know, if a huge institution says this is important and you know, 1,000 people show up for something, then, you know, people who don't necessarily have a strong background can say, okay, I guess this is something worth my time.
Well, we wouldn't be the first city or country to want to borrow our art prestige from the last great holder of art prestige. This is, again, I'll put on the historian hat here. This is what Americans did with Germans and Italians, and immigrants said, oh, well, in the old country. And so in a sense, we're still doing it. Well, if the New York Times says it's good art, it
sure
must be good art. And we are at that level. That is, in fact, the difference between, you know, being a follower and a leader, between being a consumer and a producer, that the next step for Dallas is to start saying, you know, we don't give a hoot what the New York Times says. We're going to do things that they're not willing to do in New York and take that kind of risk and think that big.
Well, you know, Jose, it's an interesting point, but I'm also reminded of the fact that the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and all those venerable New York media institutions do cover the cultural programming here in Dallas. And the real problem is that Dallas doesn't cover the cultural programming in Dallas. The fact that there's not a daily arts writer in the daily newspaper is astonishing.
What sort of background does a daily arts writer need to have in order to cover things at a certain level of depth that serves people who really know about art and also attracts people who are sort of casual consumers of art and maybe want to learn more but feel put off by a really deep, dense arts journal?
You know, there are a lot of unemployed, excellent arts writers out there right now that would love nothing more than to come to Dallas and work with you all. You know, they need to have a knowledge about art history. They need to go see a lot of work. They need to be curious about what's going on and what artists are thinking about locally and internationally. And they obviously just need accessible writing skills to be able to talk about why this is interesting or not, why it's important or not, and give people some background to the artistic intention. It's a pretty easy thing.
And I do need that. We're using art sometimes here to mean visual art. That Dallas mm-hmm. does have, one of the best music critics in Scott Cantrell in the country. We have wonderful arts writing, general arts writing, mostly about the performing arts from KERA and D Magazine and also in the Dallas Morning News. So we do have, again, some of the pieces are already there, and the pieces that we have are actually very good. But we certainly need more arts writing, and especially visual arts criticism.
My guests this hour are Jose Bowen, who is Dean of the Meadow School of the Arts at SMU, and Ann Pasternak, President and Artistic Director of Creative Time. It's an arts advocacy group that just completed a study called Building a Thriving Artistic Community as part of its Meadows Prize. We would love to hear from you about what you think about this subject. Right now, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. We want to take a quick break from this discussion to give you a chance on this cold and snowy and icy day to support KERA, not simply its coverage of the arts, but its coverage of every topic under the sun. You can do that by going online to kera.org and making a contribution of financial support. You can also call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is here now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And I want to thank Ann and Jose for coming in. In spite of Snowmageddon.
They slid
there.
Right in.
Yeah, and you know, I was jokingly this morning calling this the Wintry Mix membership campaign 2011. But you know what? It is, and it's a great day for you to make your voice heard in support of public radio here in North Texas. We're thrilled to be able to bring the very first discussion of the Meadows Prize report from Creative Time to North Texas today on this show. And we're very happy to be able to work with Meadows and with Creative Time to organize that for you today. And we're really thrilled that we were able to go forward. It's an opportunity for you right now to call 888-694-6931 or to contribute at kera.org to support this kind of programming. I mean, where else are you going to find an hour-long live discussion of the art scene in your community on the air, and especially in the fifth media market? I mean, this is what this show is all about, and we know you want to have this conversation. So please support it this afternoon.
Quick housekeeping note. We are on a skeleton crew today. Jeff Whittington is doing fundraising with me. He's in the other room answering phones. So if you are calling in to participate in the discussion, hang on the line. We'll get to your call in just a couple of minutes. Just stay there and let it keep ringing, and we will take your call.
I'm the skeleton, in other words.
You are the skeleton. Well, you know, it's important to us. It was very important to Jeff and me. We had many conversations this morning about what should we come in, should we not come in, should we have everybody come in. We were so excited to talk about this. We know that you are probably, maybe you have a little extra spare time today to be listening to the radio. We appreciate that. It occurs to me that if maybe you're home today and getting paid for not working, you could kick a few dollars KERA's way in support of the programming. It's easy to do. It just takes a couple of minutes. You can go online to kera.org or you can call 1-888-694-6931. As always, we have lots of ways to say thank you.
Yeah, we have the quintessential black Think coffee mug available at the $60 membership level. There are all kinds of different thank you gifts. If you heard an author on the show over the last week, their book is still available. You can see that online at kera.org. But please don't wait. The sooner you call, the sooner you contribute online, the sooner this drive wraps up. And of course, the minute you do make your contribution, the drive is over for you and it will sound different. So call 888-694-6931 or contribute at kera.org.
One of the things that your contributions do besides paying for all this programming is helping keep the heat on in the building. We definitely appreciate that, and we could certainly use it today. So we'd love to hear from you now at kera.org or online, or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We are speaking this afternoon about the new Meadows Prize Report, Building a Thriving Artistic Community, that was put together by Creative Time. Ann Pasternak is president and artistic director of that group, and Jose Bowen is dean of the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's step back here for a second and talk about, first of all, how do you come in from New York City and look at what's happening in Dallas, Texas, and figure out what's going on, not to mention what's right and what's wrong and what could stand improvement?
You know, it's an excellent question. The truth is that Jose and I argued about this quite a bit because, you know, as outsiders, I can imagine it being questioned by people locally. What are these New Yorkers, outsiders, doing commenting or trying to understand our art scene in just, you know, 4 or 5 visits? And it's a fair criticism. But we also thought maybe there's an opportunity that people would feel comfortable and confident talking to us anonymously and sharing with us what they think is really great and things that, you know, they think could stand some improvement. And in fact, that was our experience, that artists, institutional leaders, artistic directors, press, historians, all sorts of people, urban planners, city officials, wanted to talk to us about, you know, what was very exciting and also where they thought there were opportunities for growth to fix things. And so, you know, this report is really just a first draft, and it doesn't have any hallelujah moments. You know, there's nothing earth-shattering in here. There are no major big steps or things to do completely differently. It really just is a reflection back of these are things that we heard that you wanted to do, and they're easily accomplishable. And, you know, let's get this report out there and start to get other people's feedback through this program, through the internet, through conferences that are going to happen, and see this as getting a sort of the ball rolling.
You know, what's really interesting about that, Anne, is that because you talk to a lot of local people, there are many elements in this that sound somewhat familiar to people who are trying to pay attention. I'm wondering, Jose, if you think that we could all say it to each other and it wouldn't count so much. But when you bring someone in who can look at this from a fresh perspective, somehow it is easier to put it down on paper and say, absolutely, this has weight to it.
I think there's some of that. It's easier to talk to somebody else and to have somebody else tell you these things. But I should add that Anne and Pasternak and Creative Time are very well known. This is not just some consultants we hire. These are people who do this for other cities. They're involved in art all around the planet. They've been doing interesting projects. They're very well known, and so we were also getting a different perspective, not just in terms of geography, but in terms of a type of scene and what's going on.
Yeah.
And what they bring, having worked with other cities and other artistic communities. That was actually one of the things that was most interesting about this was the previous work with other communities and the idea of how do you nurture an artistic community? How do you see what's unique in this place and figure out how to nurture that and make it better? So we had real expertise that we didn't have in Dallas in a way. Yes, we had somebody who was foreign and looking at it, but also fresh eyes. fresh eyes,
yeah,
do help sometimes. And I think the way that you see that, what's interesting about this is that the report is going to be much more positive than people realize. You know, back to our first question about, well, you know, does Dallas have a problem? Does it need to go? Dallas has almost all of the major building blocks that it needs to be the great international arts community and attract talent from all over the world to come and want to live in Dallas to produce new art. And I don't think that's what people expected to hear. And then to have it spelled out. What are the things? Well, we have great donors. We have great institutions. We have art live workspace that's affordable. I mean, we have lots of the things that any other city would be jealous to have.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, there were these conversations that had already started before we'd gotten here. But this was just an opportunity to have somebody from the outside take the time to collect all those conversations and ideas and feed them back on a few pieces of paper.
What is unique about Dallas overall as compared with New York or Chicago or L.A. or any of the other cities that are really interested in art?
You know, Dallas thinks big. I've never seen another city like this. It's amazing. And the kind of generosity and optimism and people joining together to make things happen is really special. I think it's uniquely Dallas, in my opinion.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll go to the phones now, and we have John on the line in Dallas. Hi, John.
Hey, good afternoon. Chris, I know it's how prone Horner, the station's horn, but as a member, I'm happy to have my money invested in the Art and Seek blog. I don't take the paper anymore, but I can go right there and find everything that's going on in the art scene. And secondly, I'd like a comment from Ms. Pasternak about what she thinks of the region or the theater scene here. We spend all our time at the Undermain and the Kitchen Dog and the Hub Theater, and we think the theater scene here outside of the Performing Arts Center, which is fine, is very dynamic and unique.
You know, it's true. We had the pleasure of meeting with leadership at Undermine, for example, and Red Dog, and we were just so impressed with the visionary programming and leadership of those institutions, the collaboration, their histories. Our impression is that, theater is certainly live and well. I do think that, if I recall correctly, there were, desires to bring in other young voices into the area. There wasn't necessarily always the support for that, and develop more of sort of the acting skills within the local community. Is that your impression, Jose?
Yeah, I agree 100% with the caller. There is a very, very healthy theater scene outside of what's going on right downtown. Again, back to the previous point, a lot of what's going on in Dallas is extraordinary. On the list of the report lists things like, arts education in Dallas. I know everybody, wants to complain about public schools. What we've got going on with Big Thought and DISD is truly revolutionary. It's not where we need to be yet, but we've really got a lot of the pieces in place. We have galleries. We have big institutions. We have medium-sized theater as well. What we do need in the theater side is more. And the funding mechanisms we have in town tend to support the large institutions over the small and medium size. That's a tweak. That's not you got to tear it down and start over. That's an outside observation that we do have very, very strong theater companies in Dallas, and I too go to those places and see great work. We just need more of it, and we need to support those institutions. And people need to say when they're going to go out to the theater, yes, I want to go to the Dallas Theater Center, but I also want to go to Undermain as well.
And, related to that, and to the caller's point about, looking for events online, of course, that's a bit mentioned in this report as well. It's very important that audiences encourage their friends to go to these mid-sized and smaller theater companies that they may not normally, be aware of or, trust that they know that something experimental might be something interesting to them. And so it's very important that audiences in Dallas really share what's exciting, what they're really enjoying at these other organizations, and encourage new audiences to join. The more financial support these organizations have through ticket sales and donations, the more programming they're going to be able to deliver and the better the quality.
How robust are the connections between the really big, well-funded arts organizations and the ones that are sort of underground or temporary or just getting started?
What do you mean by the connections?
Well, I mean, do they have working relationships that make sense? Do they just peacefully coexist and say, hey, they're doing great stuff over there? Or is there room perhaps for the development of a stronger relationship?
I think it's different in every artistic community, every discipline, mm-hmm. Dance, music, theater, visual arts, et cetera. I do think, and Anne can either nod or not. I'm not going to look at her. I think that in Dallas we have much more collaboration than we do in other places. That's not to say we couldn't do it better, and it's not to say that we have, the big institutions supporting all the little ones. But we can get collectors, all the big collectors into a room. We can get galleries. We can get museum heads. We can get people who act in different companies to come together. There is some discussion. People were willing to have the dialogue and to come out and talk. We do have good partnerships. Big Thought is a great honest broker at the Meadow School. We partner with a lot of these institutions. We have our students on stage at the Water Tower, not just at the Dallas Theater Center. So we're trying to partner with a variety of institutions. So yes, I think we can do more. But I think compared to other cities, that's actually a strength for Dallas.
Are you nodding? Are you not nodding?
I am nodding. you know, as to Jose's very first point when we started this conversation, it's an issue of good to great. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot of cross-collaboration among different institutions of different disciplines and different sizes. But you'll also hear that people long for even more collaboration, more opportunities, especially smaller and mid-sized organizations.
Is there sort of a critical mass that we have to get to in terms of attracting more talent, both in terms of working artists and also leadership of these organizations? Do you have to have a certain number of people that everyone agrees are world-class, a certain number of works, a certain number of galleries and spaces, and then other people who are still emerging say, that is where I want to go?
You know, I think we need to dissect this term world class. You hear it a lot in Dallas. And
I used it without even thinking about what the definition might be.
And we don't really take it apart in this report, but I do think it's something that Dallas really needs to take a look at, because to me, I wonder if there's a, you know, sort of hidden thing that's not said, that world class means time tested and true, but not risk-taking and experimental. And I hope that's not the case, because world-class should mean experimental and risk-taking as well. It should embrace the new and not just the safe. So that's one thing I wanted to call mm-hmm. our attention to. In terms of the leadership, you know, institutions now face extraordinary challenges, our nonprofit institutions. Their leaders need to be great fundraisers. They need to be able to work with municipalities on all sorts of legal aspects of having a building and having an audience in those buildings. They need to be great artistic directors. They need to have outreach to international communities of, you know, institutions and artists all around them. There's so many skills that are required. And so, you know, we do actually have great leadership at the major institutions here in Dallas, more often than not. I think they deserve recognition for the extraordinary work that they're doing. I also think that the boards need to be really sensitive to the kinds of jobs and challenges that leaders of institutions have today. They can't rely on public funding any longer. You know, their jobs are really divided. And so I think that the boards want to be really supportive of having leadership that's great at the financial oversight and management of their teams, as well as great at fundraising, and also, you know, artistically very visionary and strategic-minded for their institutions. And very often that may mean, too, having deputy directors who take care of the management or artistic directors who are taking care of the programming. The jobs are much bigger today than what they were historically in this country.
Ann Pasternak from Creative Time and Jose Bowen from the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU are my guests this hour. We will resume our conversation with them, hear some more from you in a few minutes. The telephone number to call is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back in the room. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. What a great conversation, and I think it's great that we've heard from some folks who have called 888-694-6931, or they've contributed online at KERA.org. I want to thank David and Katie Green in Dallas, Jeff Showers in Dallas, Edward Mullen in Dallas, Samuel Duncan in Fort Worth, Daniel Smith in Rowlett. We also heard from Manfred Sitzman in Dallas. They've all come on board with KERA here just in the last 35 minutes or so during the Think Show. So how about you? Won't you join these folks and help continue the reality of intelligent, thoughtful radio here in North Texas? Radio that, let's face it, your life just wouldn't be the same without. And that's the best reason for you to support public radio on KERA.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org and make a contribution. We hope that you are enjoying this day. We hope that your office said, we don't need you today, in your home, maybe still in your pajamas. Those are the best possible days. They're good days to listen to public radio. We also hope that you are considering the fact that there are really significant expenses associated with providing this product for you. You turn on the radio and it seems free, but it's not free to produce. And the reality is that public radio is set up with the expectation that everyone who listens will spend a little bit of money every year helping to defray the costs of public radio. We have not only local programming and news gathering costs, but of course, there are all of the national programs that you listen to. We may not contribute that much content directly directly to them, but we certainly contribute significant amounts of revenue so that they can make things like All Things Considered and Car Talk and Morning Edition, all the programs that you count on this station. And our fee structure is set up so that the bigger the market, the more you pay, which means we in Market, what is this, five, Jeff?
Market five, yeah.
We pay a lot every year for these programs that you listen to, so we would appreciate your support now.
Yeah, and you know, public radio and NPR specifically has been expanding its global coverage as well over the last decade or so. While other news networks are really shrinking, you know, NPR has full-time bureaus on every continent. You hear Ophébia Questarton all the time.
I thought you were going to mention her. I love when she says Dakar.
Dakar, when she does awesome. her Dateline. Yeah, that's great. And you've heard Eleanor Beardsley, who's been in Tunis. She went down from France, and she's been there the last couple of weeks because the unrest across the Muslim world and across northern Africa has been really profound. And you're going to get all that coverage. At the same time, even though we're having a really thoughtful, focused conversation this hour on the art scene here in North Texas and how what the potentials are here, we're going to make sure that we keep you up to date on weather and road conditions. Bill Zeeble is working right now to prepare another report that you're going to hear at 1:04. Today. So stay with KERA because you know what you get from KERA, but please do support the station because that's what makes it possible for you to just say, wonder what's going on in the world, turn on the radio, and within an hour or even 15 minutes in some cases, you've got enough information to go out and make informed decisions about who you're going to be in society this day, this week, this month, this year, and maybe your whole life. Maybe this is something that a tool that you've been using your whole life, and we just have not yet asked you specifically to make that contribution. Well, I'm asking you right now to just take a moment and go online to KERA.org or call 888-694-6931 and contribute.
One of the reasons we did not all take the day off here today is that we know that you count on this content, that you expect it to be here, that you expect to turn on your radio and have information about what's happening, not just with the weather, but with the news. And we know that you listen to Think and expect new programming, and you want to hear interesting things like the conversation that we're having this hour about the Creative Time Report. We're really proud to be able to bring that to you. It's something that we think of as a personal mission as much as an institutional mission. It's all made possible by your financial support. So you may be in a place where you can, you know, chip in $5 a month. You may be in a much better place where you can become a Friends member at $125 a month or $1,500 a year. Whatever works within your budget is your business, but we do ask that regardless of what your budget is, you make a contribution at KERA.org.
You know, Chris, I want to give a special shout out to Paul, and I've got to go get his last name off my desk, but he contributed overnight last night. He is the Peace Corps Program Director in Kazakhstan, and he listens specifically to the Think podcast, and he made a contribution to KERA within the last 24 hours because he gets so much from the Think podcast. So thanks, Paul, and I'll get your last name for the next break, but I just wanted to say that. And please join us. If someone who works for the Peace Corps in Kazakhstan can support your local radio station, well, you probably can too. So go online.
You're just sitting there in Carrollton in your socks and
Carrollton,
pajama pants.
Carrollton's fine, but we can take your call right now at 888-694-6931.
Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about the brand new, just released Creative Time Meadows Prize report, Building a Thriving Artistic Community, with Ann Pasternak, who is President and Artistic Director of Creative Time, and Jose Bowen, Dean of the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. And I saw you writing down all kinds of notes when Ann was speaking before we took our last break, Jose. So what do you want to add?
Well, you had asked about critical mass and about world class. So I have just two follow-ons. So about critical mass. The answer is yes. In the arts, more is better. More artists, more art making, more audiences. It's better. Yeah, certainly there are certain things we'd rather people to go to certain times. But in general, if people are going out, if more people go out, whether it's to the movies, to theater, to art galleries, that's a good thing for artists. But in my view, it's also a good thing for the city and for humanity. on the world class, my only suggestion here is it would be very useful for Dallas to stop saying the word world class. Every time anytime you want to say world class, just substitute groundbreaking or substitute innovative. Are we an innovative city?
Or important.
Important. Is this groundbreaking art or is this important art? Does it matter? Because if it matters to us, it will start to matter to other people.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have an email here from Stephen who wants to know if you considered the motion picture and film industry.
Nope. I think it's alive and well. I have no idea.
We talked about how wide to cast the net. Yeah. I mean, there is probably more visual art here than performing arts. You know, in the medical school, we certainly have a film and television department, and there is a movie industry. There's also gaming and other kinds of things. We thought we would more of this is about Dallas's ambitions, specifically when it comes to the arts and to visual arts in particular. Although with the new Performing Arts Center, we could hardly avoid those are symbols of our ambition.
It's true. And I think it's important to, again, say that we really saw this as an opportunity to be a catalyst for a conversation and continued conversation. In no way could a report ever be complete. And certainly this report is not complete. It's not a scientific survey, but rather an opportunity for people to have conversation, to share with us their hopes and desires, and to feed that back. And hopefully people will take occasion to make some differences within the institutions they're involved with their own artistic practice, whatever the case may be.
I think you both in your own way made the point that the term world class is maybe not that helpful in this discussion. But you've both also used, and you in particular, a term that I also wonder if we can define. Let's talk about what it means to be a risk-taking producer of art. Does that just mean ticking people off? Does it mean broadening the definition of what is art? Does it mean broadening the definition of who is an artist? What exactly is it to be a risk taker?
You know, that's such a good question. You ask lots of good questions.
Thank you.
So, and Jose, you'll help me out with this, but I'll get the ball rolling. I think in terms of risk-taking, it first comes from the artist. It's an opportunity for them to push their practice. If artists aren't growing, our culture is not growing. So it's very, very critical that artists have opportunities to try new things. And it's okay if they don't work. You know, we're not saving lives here. So it's all right if, you know, that installation they had dreamed of, you know, in the middle of downtown on some city street isn't everything that they had dreamed of. At least they're trying new things and they're being creative and adventurous and curious and inquisitive and informed. So, you know, I think that's very important. I think it's also okay that people don't have to like everything that they see. What is this attitude with art throughout our country that somehow or other it has to appeal to everybody? That's not what art is about. Art is about ideas. It's about having us think about where we've come from and who we are now and who we might be in the future. It provides a mirror to our times. And, you know, our society isn't always pretty or pleasant. So, you know, why is it that art has to be that way? What is that standard about? And I think that communities all over this country need to really challenge themselves when they think that art needs to be appealing.
All of the above.
And I actually do think that art is about saving lives sometimes. But art is also a site of conversation. It's how we talk about ourselves. It's how we talk to ourselves. And so if we're afraid to talk about some subjects, it's a more limited conversation, and our communities and our country suffer. So now we don't need all art to, you know, to tick people off or to be challenging, but we do need some art to tick people off and be challenging. We need to have a diversity of views in the art community that reflect the diversity of views in our intellectual and political communities, so that we get a spectrum of ideas and that ideas can do battle against each other. We can say, well, I don't like that, and here's why I don't like that. But I do like this, and here's why this speaks to me and that doesn't speak to me. What speaks to you? And having those real conversations and not being afraid to say, well, is it pretty and you don't like it? Oh, well, that's okay. If you don't like it, that's okay.
And I think our institutions, and again, I'm speaking nationally, not in particular to Dallas, need to embrace controversy. It's a healthy healthy thing to have controversy because it gives us an opportunity to speak with one another about issues that we care about. And, you know, you take a look at the Smithsonian's recent censorship of a David Vonarovich video that was considered to be anti-Christian. And I watched that video three times and I thought, wow, what a profoundly spiritual work of art this is. It's about our loss of morality, asking us to take a look at what we really believe and how we treat other human beings. And when the Smithsonian just decided to remove that artwork, it killed all opportunity for conversation.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Michael in Addison. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Quick question. I don't think y'all have talked about this. As an artist in the area, and I hate to be slightly negative, I wanted to ask about the what your impressions were between the social scene and the art scene in Dallas. And how it seems that the people, the artists, performers who attend the right parties and have their photos, you know, in Paper City and things like that, seem to get the best commissions and more work than other people who, frankly, may be better but aren't as well, who are a little bit more socially awkward. It's kind of. Frankly, I see it kind of as a relationship, a little bit of a relationship, like a—I hate to say this, but sort of like a pimp and his girl on the street.
Yeah, I think we got your point, Michael. And I want to make sure we have to, I appreciate it, and I want to make sure we have time because we're starting to run out of time. I mean, I know that's as old as arts patronage itself, but is it a bad thing?
Well, you know, we hear this all the time, and that's true of every city, probably on the planet, where there are artists and patrons. But I think that there is something to be said for artists taking their own agency and not relying on, you know, the one or two institutions or the several collectors that exist, but instead making their own opportunities happen. We, again, saw this happen when artists joined forces together and created their own pop-up spaces for temporary exhibitions. There's opportunities to be engaging new audiences within your own community by making work within your community and getting outside of the four white walls of the studio. So, you know, I think one of the important messages of this report is, yes, everybody should be, you know, seeing artist studios and artists should have more opportunities to show, but also artists need to take their own agency more.
And I'm also not sure that Dallas is any worse than any other place with mm-hmm. that regard. I mean, I certainly experienced that in my own career. You know, there are definitely piano players that I at least don't think are as good, who are smoother talkers and who are, you know, have better websites and are better able to promote their work. You know, we have this new arts entrepreneurship program at the Meadows School that we've launched. You know, the first time in the nation that an art school has said that it's not just enough to make great art, that you also have to know how to sell your art, that you're actually you are the product. So you need to be on. You need to have other kinds of skills. You need to have a website. You need to think about your business plan. You need to think about whether you want to be a 501c3 or an LLP or a sole proprietor. You need to actually think a little bit about the career and the selling as maybe a separate piece. And then ask the question, can I integrate this into my art, and how do I do that? So we're creating new curriculum for that. But all of that said, not everybody's going to be able to do that. Some people are shy. Some people are more outgoing. And in art, like in any other business, it certainly helps. I mean, because we are in sales in part, it certainly helps some people to be more social and outgoing, to be able to sell your work. And maybe that's not how society should work, but that's how it does. And so I don't think that's particular to Dallas. I do think artists need to think about that. But I'm aware that not everybody is going to be as good at it.
Or not everybody is going to find it tasteful and want to do it. And that's
right.
Fine, but they need to have expectations that are realistic.
That's exactly right.
I want to end with something. We don't have too much time left, but can we simultaneously serve the needs of major league benefactors and arts collectors and producing working artists and, you know, sort of people who might visit a gallery or a museum but don't have the means to purchase a major work? Can we serve all their needs simultaneously, or do we need to consider them as separate groups that are sort of aligned but not the same?
You know, audiences are very complex. There is no such thing as an audience, mm-hmm. right? They come from all sorts of backgrounds, religious beliefs, you know, ethnicities, of course, different classes. And so you have to really think about your audience needs according to, you know, the specifics. And so, yes, we can fulfill all their needs. I absolutely believe that. I think the institutions are really doing that very well in many cases. Yes, we need to really think much more clearly about who our audiences are, what their lifestyle choices are, what their interests are, and how to connect them to our institutions even better.
I think the answer is an emphatic yes. I mean, I know that no one in Dallas is thinking about sports this weekend, but
lots of arts at the stadium.
There is indeed. But to use a sports analogy, I mean, there are every professional team needs a farm team. And some people actually like to go watch minor league baseball. And we need youth programs that it's not as if the next basketball and baseball players are, just appear at 18 in college, that they've played t-ball or they've played soccer or whatever it is. That those broad activities do feed the top of the professional pyramid, and the countries who want to do better at the Olympics, right? They start by having youth training programs to get more people involved in sport. And it's the same if there was an Olympics of art. There's not, because it's not a competitive activity. But if there was an Olympics of art, we would start by saying, oh, if we want to do better in that, we need to have more arts education for elementary school children.
You get a total high five for that metaphor,
yes.
By the way. I thought that worked beautifully.
Oh, okay.
Jose Bowen is Dean of the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. Ann Pasternak is President and Artistic Director of the Arts Advocacy Group Creative Time, which today releases its Meadows Prize report, Building a Thriving Artistic Community. You can find a link to that report and more information at artandseek.org. And Jose, always nice to see both of you. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks to all of you who have been listening this hour, who have been calling and writing in to participate in the conversation. It's great to have you here with us and as part of this discussion. We also appreciate your contributions to the station's financial health at KERA.org and on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris.
Wearing like six hats today.
Hey, and we have it on really good authority that artists in their studios, even right now, are listening to the station. So Ann Pasternak wanted me to point that out and say that, you listen to the station, too. We'd love to have you as a contributor as well.
And, if there's a guy earning a Peace Corps salary in Kazakhstan.
Oh, shoot. I was going to get that guy's
form. Go get it. I'll chat for a minute. I'll vamp. Certainly you can find it somewhere in your budget. We have members here who do the basic membership level, which is $35 a year. We have lots of people who are, giving thousands of dollars a year. Lots of people who are somewhere in between. The average gift is about $120. But if that doesn't work for you, by all means, adjust it up, adjust it down. The important thing is your participation at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931. I think according to the latest updates, we've earned something over $376,000 for this membership campaign. That's great. Our goal, we can't stop until we've earned, thanks to you, $700,000, because that's what we need to keep the station strong and keep providing you the programming that you rely on, whether the weather is nice or the weather is pretty nasty out. Your support makes it possible. Okay, so you're back, Jeff.
Yeah, so Paul Butke.
Thank you, Paul.
He says, I'm donating from Kazakhstan, where I'm the programming and training director of the Peace Corps. He says, the Think podcast is among my most preferred. It's keeping up to date with important events and trends back home. Thanks, Chris.
Oh, that's so wonderful. It's great. Thank you for writing in and for your contribution, Paul. And we'll probably never hear from him again because we've embarrassed him.
No. I mean, Paul, we really appreciate it.
It really is nice. We have lots of people from all over the world now who listen to the show, and your support is greatly appreciated. And I would consider that wonderful, but above and beyond. But if you live in North Texas and this is your primary public radio station, then we definitely need to hear from you.
Well, and when you make your contribution online, there's a form, a place where you can fill in a comment. And these are some of the other comments that we've gotten. This is from Karen, who says, I winter in a campground in Hickory Creek. I'm on full disability. The rest of the year I live four states away. But she says, I'm simply unable to resist Jeff W.'s gentle urging. If I can pledge a little something, anyone can.
It's very nice.
So thank you so much, Karen. Very, very much appreciate it. And Karen, you're absolutely right. It takes everyone to make public radio a success in North Texas. And thanks to everyone who has contributed, the station has been successful for about 37 years. Your contribution is really important. Even we got a note here from Carl who says, this is to help Jeff make the challenge grant. I went to elementary school with Jeff Whittington, and I'm making this pledge so we won't have to cry himself to sleep.
So, isn't that nice?
Whatever and, the reason.
You know, we're so happy to be here serving you, and we appreciate your contributions to KERA.org. We're happy to be here. We really love it. We consider this work that we can't imagine doing anything else. This morning, I should tell you that I was a little nervous about backing out. I have a very steep driveway, and I was a little nervous about that portion of the drive. And Jeff said, I'll come pick you up. Don't worry, I'll be there in 30 minutes. And, you know, that's the kind of above and beyond.
20 minutes.
Well, if you'd been there in 20 minutes, you'd have come in an ambulance.
Yeah,
but,
that's probably right.
Anyway, you know, we really feel strongly about serving you, and we're so proud and pleased to be able to do it. And we're always so grateful to those of you who say, okay, this is a service that I value too. I want to be part of the team that is KERA. And so I will call 1-888-694-6931 to support your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, 100.1 K261 CW Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR Wichita Falls, and 99.3 K257 EV Sherman.
Of course, wherever you're listening, you're listening to KERA, your public radio station news and information service right here in North Texas. And as Chris and I have discussed, we did manage to drive in today. But as we've discussed, it's about an hour and 15-minute walk at a good clip.
Jeff and I have had this talk like, okay, if the weather's really bad, how long would it take us to walk there?
Yeah, I mean, we could walk it. We could walk it, you know, if we stayed on the grass and the traction-y, crunchy stuff in about an hour and a half. But we're here, and we're thrilled that many of you have contributed as well today at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
Your support really matters. We would love to hear from you on this cold and snowy day. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.